Police in Worcester County are on the hunt for a killer tonight. Now the fear is this case could be linked to others.
Since 2003, five women have been abducted from Worcester, Massachusetts, murdered and dumped in woodlands out of town. Authorities are calling their killer the Woodsman, and the public is desperate for answers.
We need a person to stand up and to bring my sister's murder to justice.
This case is colder than a New England winter. That's why I'm heading out there to hunt fresh leads, even if I have to dig them out from under the snow. I'm M. William Phelps, best-selling crime author, and I have an obsession. Serial killer, cold cases.
Now, nearly 10 years later, investigators say they still need the public's help.
For me, it's personal. My sister-in-law was murdered, and her killer has never been caught. These killers are still out there. Their victims deserve justice. And just one new clue could make all the difference. I don't have a badge, but I do have something cops don't have. Someone who understands the dark mind of a murderer.
Boy, I'm telling you, nobody can hear her scream.
Because he is one. Between early 2003 and late 2007, the Woodsman snatched five young women from the Main South area of Worcester. These were all young moms mixed up in drugs and prostitution, all dark-haired, dark-skinned, and petite. For the people of Massachusetts, it's like these murders happened yesterday. They're just waiting for the killer to strike again. That's why law enforcement don't like to call it a cold case. To them, it's an active investigation, and that means they can't share their information publicly. But I'm meeting a source on the inside, criminal profiler John Kelly, who has profiled the case and even coined the killer's name, the Woodsman. Kelly was on the task force that caught the most prolific serial killer in U.S. history, Gary Ridgway, who murdered 48 prostitutes and dumped them in the forest. So far, the Woodsman is only tied to five bodies. But is he just getting started?
So are we looking at a guy who trolls around, stalks the city, looking for the perfect victim to take out in the woods?
Absolutely. We're looking for a guy who's getting excited about the hunt.
I want to know, why is he targeting prostitutes? Is he killing them in the city? In some cheap motel? Or are the woods his kill zone? I want Kelly to ask his secret collaborator, an incarcerated serial killer who gives advice on other murderers. His code name is 13. Kelly has consulted with 13 on this killer before, and he thinks he's got special insight. He won't tell me the details, but as far as their crimes are concerned, he says 13 and the Woodsman have a lot in common.
Okay, John. Knock yourself out.
Kelly thinks the Woodsman kills outdoors. Does 13 agree?
He's not going to act out in an inside, indoor crime scene.
Right. Outdoor crime scene. Definitely. They've walked to a secluded location to do what they do. Motel where screams can easily be heard. Not to mention all the fingerprints and DNA that can be left behind.
Right.
I think the Woodsman is smarter than that.
Why drug-addicted prostitutes?
They're easy. You know, you throw a $20 bill at them or a 50, and they'll go anywhere with you. That's it.
If 13's right, then the Woodsman is an intelligent killer with a well-planned MO, reliable victim selection, and a remote location for the kill.
He's focusing on the woods because he knows an outside crime scene is much harder to process than an inside crime scene.
Especially if those bodies are left out there for a long, long time.
I need to see these woods, so I'm heading out to Marlborough, Massachusetts, 18 miles out of Worcester. It's where the first two girls' bodies were found. Betsaida Montalvo and Carmen Rudy.
These are the types of areas these guys love because there's easy access off a highway into the deep forest, you know? I mean, that's, if you're gonna dump a body, it doesn't get much better than that.
I'm meeting someone who's been following this case from the start, local reporter Scott Croteau. He's taken me to site number one, here, next to the Hillside School in Marlborough.
Marlborough was one of my communities. I didn't think it would ever result in a phone call telling me that they found a skeleton up at a private school like Hillside School.
So you get a call from a source, you rush out here. Tell me what happens.
So you see what you see. A lot of cruisers, a lot of activity, a lot of cops in the woods. And then, you know, what you started to see was some cadaver dogs doing some searches to see if there was anything more than what they had already found, which was a lot.
So tell me about these girls.
Carmen Rudy and Betsaida Montalvo. They, you know, lived a harsh life. They were in Maine, south of Worcester. One of them had a record of prostitution. The other one was a known prostitute. They used drugs. They had families. They had kids. But ultimately, you know, they fell victim to that tough lifestyle of trying to feed their habit and work on the streets.
Victim number one, Betsaida Montalvo, was last seen in April 2003. Ah! 5 months later, she was found here by a group of students walking through the woods.
Whoa!
She was 29 years old, a mother of five, forced to sell her body to feed her family and her drug habit. The police search led to another discovery 5 days later. Just 100 yards away from Betsaida's shallow grave, a second skeleton. Carmen Rudy, also 29 and a mother of two, had been missing for a year.
So we're talking 200 yards into the woods, or two football fields, really.
I mean, that's about right, yeah.
That's not right on the side of the road, right?
No, it's not. And this is some tough terrain. It's marshy, it's damp, it's coyotes. So you really have to know this territory if you want to start walking in there.
You have to be a woodsman.
About a mile down the road at site number two, the plot thickens. The third victim, 33-year-old Denelia Torres, went missing from Maine South, Worcester, in August 2003. 6 months later, in spring 2004, her decomposed remains were found here by a utility worker.
The Worcester victims were all said to be involved with prostitution.
But unlike Betsaida and Carmen, Denelia's body was only a few yards from the roadside.
This is definitely a dump and run.
Oh, compared to the other sites where the first two girls were found, we were deep in the woods, and then you come to this site on the side of the road, you can see traffic coming by.
So how long was she here?
Looks like a couple months or a few months. It's unclear. You know, what you had here was you had winter that came in, so you had a good snow build. You had high brush. So although it seems like a hurried dump site for a body, the brush and the snow might have helped cover it up for a few more months.
After months of exposure to the elements, these three victims' bodies were too decomposed to determine cause of death, and any physical evidence had vanished.
I've never heard of any DNA evidence in these cases to come up with a suspect or link them together.
But a person of interest has been identified. A local man, white male, in his late 30s. currently facing trial for a separate murder rape. I can't name him because he hasn't yet been charged in the Woodsman case, although he is firmly on the cops' radar.
In the beginning, I was told he started just being flagged as a suspect. He had traces of violence towards women. He grew up in this area. He knew this area. And they started to keep an eye on him and see what was going on.
Is he a serial killer is the question.
Well, I want that answer too. But you don't have any DNA evidence on one of the bodies beside of Montalvo. All you had was pajamas and a bracelet that had number one mom. I think that says a lot.
Prostitutes, hookers, whatever you're calling them these days, those cases, society doesn't give a because they are who they are. Look, no girl is playing with a Barbie one day and the next day saying to herself, geez, I think I'll grow up and be a crack-addicted prostitute when I'm 20 years old. It's just happens in life. And you have this scum out there preying on them. I need to get on the trail of this predator. So I'm heading out to meet the mother of one of the victims. What does she think about the person of interest developed by police?
When I say the name, how do you feel?
Hate.
Do you think he did?
By 2004, three young mothers had fallen victim to a killer they call the Woodsman. It seems the killer left no DNA evidence at the scene. But I'm on the trail of a potential suspect who may be connected to these murders in other ways. In 2008, authorities honed in on a Massachusetts native and identified him as the first real person of interest in the case. I can't show you his face because he has not yet been charged with these crimes. Police lack evidence, but the coincidences are uncanny. He was born and raised right near where the first three bodies were found. He has a history of assault on women, and he's currently facing a separate rape-murder charge. But criminal profiler John Kelly, who has worked this case and hundreds of others, reminds me of an important fact. You can't convict on coincidence.
Well, I'm certainly not going to say he killed them. I'm not saying he killed anybody. I mean, he can be innocent. He's innocent until proven guilty.
Good profilers and police officers go out of their way to poke holes in a suspect.
We got to go out to eliminate. If we can't eliminate, the case just gets better and better. If we can't eliminate, fine. We move on to our next person of interest.
I think our main focus should be Maine South.
One thing's clear. Law enforcement needs more information. Maybe somebody's seen something that puts this guy at the scene of the crime or points to someone else. I need to get word out that I'm reigniting the case. So I've arranged to meet with local Rock 102 radio hosts, Bax and O'Brien.
It is 52 right now in downtown Springfield. Cloudy and showers forever. Yeah. An error in the top of the seven.
Over the years, these guys have helped me out with local knowledge and contacts.
Bax and O'Brien are, you know, almost like the Laurel and Hardy of radio. One is short and fat.
Cut.
One is tall and skinny. And they have faces for radio. But hey, they know people. And when you're doing this type of work, one person leads you to the next, leads you to the next. The next thing you know, you got another piece of that puzzle in place.
Rock 102, Springfield's Classic Rock. It's Bax and O'Brien and our friend Matt Phelps is in the studio. Matt, it's good to see you again.
Bax, nice to see you.
I'd like to say it's nice to see you, but the only time we ever see you is when somebody's dead.
Bax and O'Brien know why I'm here, and they know about the Woodsman.
We've been reading about him for a while. He's got a certain type that he goes after, and they're dealing with people that may not be necessarily missed if they go away.
You're absolutely right, Bax. He's choosing girls that he thinks won't be missed.
Which is why I think the public generally doesn't care.
A lot of times. And that is sad.
Yeah.
I mean, you guys know that my sister-in-law was murdered in Hartford. Originally, we thought, by a serial killer. She was 5 months pregnant, right? And again, she was doing stuff in Hartford she shouldn't have been doing, okay? And her death was pushed into a pile of girls who were doing stuff they shouldn't have been doing to get drugs. Mm-hmm. But you know what? A lot of those cases are unsolved, and you have to ask yourself, why are they unsolved?
Most people may not be thinking in terms of a serial killer. They're just thinking in terms of, well, we just lost another prostitute. And they don't think of, you know, maybe there's a lot more to it than just this girl disappeared.
And that's the danger here. And I think we should say here that it's important, if anybody does know anything, that they should call into the station, get a hold of you guys so you can pass it along to me. Mm. Because somebody knows something. It happens in every single case.
Hopefully, someone comes forward before another girl is taken. Now, I'm headed to Maine South, the killer's hunting grounds.
Driving into Worcester right now brings back memories for me, because at one time I used to come here twice a week at night. And it was one of those cities that, when I came here, I couldn't wait to get the hell out. There was a sense that, at one time, it was a thriving community, but now, of course, poverty, unemployment has just brought it down to, you know? And hey, desperate people do desperate things. Here we are. As soon as you start seeing check cashing store signs, we're in it. Cars with three different colored fenders on them. Liquor stores, garbage. We're in it.
Baxton O'Brien gave me the name of the local funeral director, Peter Stefan. He not only knew the Woodsman's first three victims, he handled their funerals. Peter often stopped and chatted with the victims, like he does with all the women who work on Maine South.
Well, one, I talk about her children. Other thing, you talk about the neighborhood. Talk about anything else that you and I might talk about. There's nothing different about them other than the fact that you know what they're doing.
Do any of the girls, when you spoke to them, mention the types of people they go with?
Well, they don't have to. Most of the people I see come by here aren't people that live here. People come by here with fairly new cars, and they don't operate in their own neighborhood. They go in other neighborhoods looking.
Peter, what's it like out on Maine South for these girls?
I've seen people that are frozen to death outside because they had no place to live. I've seen people who have been run over by trains. People who have committed suicide because of their feelings of hopelessness. I've seen people burn to death in trailers because they didn't want to live in a shelter. So you see the worst of it here because you're in a city. The people that work and better jobs and more money, they live in the suburbs. They don't see this part of society.
So tell me about this memorial mass and why you did it.
Well, I thought from a religious point of view, it should be done. I thought it would help the families, especially the children and so forth, all the relatives and friends. And we had a memorial mass for all three girls. Three human beings, I didn't want to see them just cast away, and nobody had done anything, so I thought it was time to do something, put a cap on it, some sort of closure, if you want to call it that.
Peter's compassion is real. But having lost my own sister-in-law to an unknown killer, I know these families won't really feel closure until the Woodsman is behind bars. Peter put me in touch with Evelyn Rudy, mother of victim number two, Carmen Rudy. Years after her daughter's death, the pain is as fresh as yesterday. But buried in her memory, could there be some clue to get me closer to the Woodsman?
Tell me a little bit about Carmen.
She was beautiful. She was smart. Loved animals. She loved everybody, really. I mean, I was a very strict parent. Then when she got a little bit of freedom, she got involved with drugs. And that's when the problems all started. She got pregnant at a very young age. And she had a son. And then she had another child. Then she had her children taken away from her because she was on drugs.
No, come on, get out of here.
We tried everything we could to straighten her out, but she just wasn't ready yet.
What was going on in her life right around the time she went missing?
She was just about ready to get her children back. The day she was missing, she went out for a job interview. And she was very happy about that because she really did want to work and straighten her life out. My daughter Jackie reported her missing. I mean, for a whole year we were looking for her, and everybody that passed us on the street looked like her. And it was terrible.
You know, they talk about this woodsman.
Yes.
When I say the name, how do you feel?
Hate.
Do you think he did it?
Yes.
Evelyn's pain and anger is clear. I hope I can find her daughter's killer so she can get some closure. After the first three bodies were found, all over Massachusetts, the cops were listening, waiting for someone to speak up and help lead them to the woodsman. But it was the killer himself who answered.
Investigators are trying to determine if a woman's body discovered on Monday is the work of a serial killer.
2004 in Massachusetts, the hunt was on for a killer who murdered three women and dumped them in the woods. The victims were linked in many ways, by the streets where they worked, by drugs and prostitution. They even looked similar. And there was another tragic link. They were all mothers. Then, two more women with the same connections were found murdered. Wendy Morello, 40, a mother of two, and Lenita Oliveira, 34, a mother of 11.
State police say about 200 yards off Route 122, a deer hunter, checking his tree blind, found the skeletal remains of 34-year-old Lenita Oliveira of Worcester.
I'm heading out to Rutland, where Lenita was found.
Driving out of the city, what I'm feeling is what this guy's thinking about. The adrenaline rush is over for the kill. And then a new adrenaline rush begins for the next hunt. And that's what it's about for this guy. It's about the hunt. It's about the hunt. And I guess in many ways, for me it's the same. Except I'm hunting him.
It's an enclave of privilege, known for its well-kept, quiet streets. The last place you'd expect to find a dead body.
So we're smack dab in the middle of suburbia here. A bit upper-class suburbia, but nonetheless, well-manicured lawns, big houses, big cars, and murder. And what makes this place ideal for a serial killer like the woodsman is that right there.
Rutland State Park, the perfect place for a stroll through some very pretty woods. But there are darker spots, too, off the beaten track. This is where Lenita Oliveira's remains were found. And like the other dump sites, there's water nearby.
This is the place where he feels like he's smarter than the police. He's smarter than the families. He fished here. To get to the best fishing spots, you need to trek through the woods. The woodsmen trek through the woods. He knew these places. He knew this place.
Rutland is only 12 miles out of Worcester, and not far from where the first three victims were found. it's within the woodsman's territory. But the fifth victim, Wendy Morello, was found nowhere near here. Why would the killer break his pattern? On September 1st, 2004, Wendy left her home in Worcester and jumped into a friend's car. Hi. 12 days later, and 150 miles away, in woodland bordering a residential area of York in the state of Maine, a local man walking alone made a gruesome discovery.
Oh, my God!
Unlike the other suspected victims of the woodsman, Morello's body was found shortly after she was killed, inside a plastic garbage can and over the Massachusetts state border. If it was the woodsman who killed her, why would he go so far to dump her body? I want to see if profiler John Kelly can shed some light on this.
All the other victims are found in a 20-mile radius around where they were grabbed, but Wendy Morello's found way up in Maine. Why?
See, I believe this particular killer here was staging. Staging is the act of trying to throw the cops off. I think he's left so many bodies around Worcester, Massachusetts, that he's trying to throw the cops off by taking a body and staging it in a trash can up in Maine, out of the jurisdiction of law enforcement in Massachusetts, and leaving it in the hands of the Maine police. Very similar to what Gary Ridgway, the Green River Killer, did by taking the body part of one of his victims and bringing it into the state of Oregon.
Is the woodsman doing the same thing? Or is there another reason? Maybe he has some connection to Maine through his job or family. Maine or Massachusetts, one thing definitely connects the sites. They're always in the woods and close to water. Maybe the killer is a hunter or a fisherman. I want Kelly to see what his contact on the inside thinks.
Would you call him a hunter or a fisherman?
Yes, definitely.
Okay. What kind of job do you think this guy had?
What would give somebody time off from work? Well, this guy was a roofer, a rainy day would. But rainy days also have, you know, I don't think steel workers or masons work on rainy days. Drywall guys can't work, electricians. So you got a lot of guys sitting in a gin mill, you know, depressed, drinking.
And the booze would uninhibit him, right?
Oh, that would encourage.
Sounds like a few contractors I know. Except with this guy, the consequences are fatal.
You know, this is probably just what everybody would think is just an everyday guy. You know, only the people really, really close to him know that he may have a dark side. That's it.
According to 13, the woodsman conceals his evil behind a mask of sanity. Kelly says this is common with psychopathic killers. They're skilled at faking emotions.
These people are among us. And these people come across as very charming, very nice, very willing to help. You know, their friends at work seem to like them. And this is the kind of guy you're dealing with. I mean, he knows how to be charming. He knows how to push buttons. He's a master manipulator.
A portrait of this killer is forming. But I want to know, how does the person of interest in this case measure up against that profile? John thinks it's time to call in the big guns.
Then we have this area here, which is by the Hillside School, where two bodies were found deep into the woods.
The man who helped bring down the Green River Killer himself, Frank Adamson.
They're deep in the woods, at least the two that were. are there so that they won't be discovered. And what we know about serial killers is that over time, they become better and take less chances. They don't want to be caught.
Frank headed the task force that pegged Gary Ridgway as a person of interest in the Green River case, then developed him into a suspect, and finally nailed him as the killer.
What's interesting about this location, right down the street, is our main person of interest, where he used to live with his dad. He knows the area. I also understand that he likes to frequent this area, Main South, where all the victims in this case, Frank, were grabbed.
What will he say about our guy?
He's been convicted of a violent assault, right? On trial for murder. What do you think of him, Frank?
I think this particular person definitely needs to be worked, and I think he is a high priority. He's a very good person of interest. I think he needs to be eliminated.
And we're having a hell of a time eliminating this guy, I'll tell you that right now.
We need new information, and I think I know where to get it. I've been developing a family source, and it's time to call it in. On the other end of this line is the person of interest's sister-in-law, who has agreed to answer my questions. But will she give me more than either she or I have bargained for?
You just described Ted Bundy.
A 38-year-old construction worker is now a person of interest in the serial murders of at least five women with drug addictions who worked in Worcester's Main South neighborhood.
The main person of interest in the Woodsman serial killer case is currently facing separate murder and rape charges. He has not yet been charged in the Woodsman murders. I want to help police with more information, so I'm going straight to the person of interest's family. His sister-in-law won't talk on camera, but she has agreed to let me record our conversation. She insists her brother-in-law is innocent in the Woodsman killings and in the separate murder-rape case for which he's been charged.
Good morning.
Hi, this is M. William Phelps.
Hi there, M. William Phelps.
Let's start, if we could, a little bit at the beginning. Could you just tell me a little bit about growing up?
Growing up, I know this from my husband, his brother. They were always taught to, you know, respect the woman, help them out, defend them. And I know that because my husband's that way. And all the boys are that way, actually. And, but he's always seemed like a nice guy. I mean, he's helped his dad out on a farm, and they're builders, the whole family. They're like third or fourth generation over here, and they're carpenters, and they're very good at what they do.
A carpenter. It matches 13's idea that the woodsman is probably some kind of manual worker.
Was a fisherman?
I know my husband said they used to go fishing all the time.
Another match for 13's take on this killer. Then I ask her about the murder-rape case her brother-in-law is facing. How can she explain that his DNA was found inside the victim?
To my understanding, and that lady were friends. They helped each other out, we'll say. And was known to take her to the grocery store, help her with her children. He was just a very helpful guy. That's nature. And giving her, what would you call it, her professionalism, we'll say, I wouldn't be surprised if they didn't trade out. You know, he had sex with her. Doesn't mean he killed her.
Well, when you say her profession, I mean, what are we, let's not, you know, dance around the issue. What are you saying?
It's to my understanding that she was a hooker.
So, he liked hookers?
Yes.
Do you think it's possible that he could rape a woman?
No. No, he's a nice looking guy. He has charm, he has charisma, he's very helpful, he's friendly, he's not rude at all, he has a good demeanor to him, and I can't see him wanting to rape somebody.
Charming and polite, another potential match. It reminds me of what 13 said about the woodsman hiding his dark side.
If you change the name, you just described Ted Bundy too. I mean, he was charming, good looking, you know, he...
Also, I probably described you too, didn't I?
I don't know, I wouldn't...
So you don't know if you're good looking or not, huh?
Yeah, I don't know.
Okay, but you seem charming, you seem nice.
Yeah. But...
It could be anybody, but I don't see any of that.
Right. Do you think it's possible that could be a serial killer and you wouldn't know it?
No. I read people pretty good. And I didn't have any hair stand up on the back of my neck or get any kind of weird vibes from him.
So these accusations of him being this diabolical serial killer... When you first heard him, how did you feel?
I was shocked. I was like, well, what about the other women? They didn't find any DNA on them. And if he's going to leave DNA in one or rape them, how come they didn't find his DNA in the other one?
Well, the other girls were so decomposed that they couldn't extract any DNA. Do you think it's a coincidence that two girls were found in the woods near the farm lived on with his dad?
No. Why would he dump the bodies at the place where he lived?
There's reasons why people dump bodies close to where they live, because they're familiar with the terrain.
Well, they lived all over Hudson, Marlboro, Berlin, Worcester.
Maine?
They had some... kinfolk up in Maine.
They did?
Mm-hmm. Seems like they did.
Interesting.
And they probably, I'm sure they even worked up there, because they worked all over up in there.
Up in Maine, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. He's even connected to Maine, where Wendy Morello's body was found. If this guy is the woodsman, the location makes sense. What would you say to the families of the victims, if you could?
I feel for them. It's a terrible thing to lose a loved one. I've lost my loved ones. It's a terrible thing, and hopefully one day they'll find out who killed them, and justice will be served.
What if it is?
You know, he'll have to deal with it.
Right.
He'll be the one to live with that.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Unintentionally, my source has given me several reasons to keep this person of interest on the suspect list. I'm about to call Kelly and share my new information with him, but he calls me first.
Kelly.
Listen, 13 is something he wants to say.
Something I never expected. 13 has a new theory on the woodsman, and he wants me to hear it. But is he serious or just playing games? I have to find out.
I think these girls are all surrogates for somebody that he has a lot of anger against.
Talk about that anger that he has in himself.
He has a dominant woman in his life.
And she hurt him in some way?
Yeah, she hurts him, belittles him. He just resents that so much. Of course, you know, he probably hates himself too for allowing this to happen. That's it.
13 has given me a whole new perspective on why the woodsman kills. Is it really about taking revenge on a woman who abused him? Kelly thinks 13's right, and that the killer's mother is the abusive woman.
We depend on our mothers to keep us safe. And when our mothers do not keep us safe, and we grow up in a very dysfunctional type of family, that rage, in many cases, becomes internalized. And it's like walking around with this volcanic rage getting ready to erupt. He's punishing the victims for the abuse that he feels, he perceives, that he's suffered. You know, all these victims were mothers themselves.
They also had drug problems and were involved in prostitution. In the killer's mind, does that make them abusive mothers who deserve to be killed? If that is the case, then the woodsman must have known his victims. Or at least he knew they were addicts and mixed up in hooking. I'm heading back to Maine South to speak to the sister of one of the victims. She says she's willing to give me the information that no one else has.
And there's a lot of people out there that know a lot. I don't want to say anything.
Between 2003 and 2007, in the urban jungle of Maine South, Worcester, five women fell victim to unnatural selection. Police believe they were abducted and murdered by an urban hunter, the woodsman. 13 thinks the girls were lured out to the woods on the pretense of turning a trick. They had no idea that their date was a murderer. Like the murder of my sister-in-law, these cases are unsolved, and their families are desperate for answers. On the streets of Maine South, the code of silence rules. But I'm about to meet someone who will break the code. It's Jackie Rudy, the big sister of victim number two, Carmen Rudy.
When did you know she wasn't going to come back?
She came to my house and she bought an outfit to wear for a job interview she had the next day because she was really trying to get her life together and she wanted to get her kids back. She wanted to have a happy family. But she never came back. And I knew then that she wasn't ever gonna come back. And I know that she was really, really trying to get her life back on track. I've seen her go through it many times before, but there was something different about this time. And she was basically homeless, staying with someone up in the Maine South area. And she'd have to come down Maine South every day to come to my house. And she did it. She came to my house every single day. She was staying clean. And for her just not to come back that one day, I knew there was something wrong.
So when she's found, tell me about that.
The next thing I hear about is about how they suspect it was a serial killer. And I hear about the other women being found. And I hear this name brought up, which I do believe that he is the one that murdered my sister.
Jackie is talking about the person of interest in this case. She says he's well known in the Maine South area.
I heard that the morning after her interview that she was really upset. And some guy in a black truck came and picked her up from downtown. And it just so happens that he had a black truck. The description matched his demeanor. And a lot of people did see them together, but they don't want to come out and say it.
It's a shocking connection. The last time Carmen was seen may have been with the person of interest.
And people saw Carmen get into the truck?
Yes. And not only with my sister, there was other girls that got away from him somehow, I don't know, but my sister didn't. But yeah, he was seen in the area. I've talked to people that know the situation. And there's a lot of people out there that know a lot. I don't want to say anything.
What would you say to those people out there who know something?
That is the one thing we need. We need a person to stand up and to identify him being with my sister to bring my sister's murder to justice.
Without an eyewitness coming forward, Jackie's belief that the person of interest is her sister's murderer is just that, her belief. Me, I understand her frustration. I know someone out there knows something about my sister-in-law's murder, but I can't force them to speak up either.
That interview reminded me how real this is for me, how personal it is for me. I certainly, Jackie expressed that grief that families go through, that eternal pain, really, that never stops.
Just like Carmen, my sister-in-law, Diana, got mixed up in drugs and street life and paid the ultimate price.
Diana was someone that daily caused us trouble in our lives. And everybody has that person in their family or that person they know that is just a pain in the ass and causes trouble and just they can't get it out of their own way. They can't help themselves. All of us used to constantly wish that this woman would just go away. And I think the advice I could give people would be today is don't wish that on anyone. Because one day you're going to turn around and they're gone. I call addiction the most prolific serial killer in this country. Addiction to drugs and alcohol. And we can catch those killers. It's funny because Kelly, one of his theories is that serial killers are addicted to killing. They cannot stop. Addiction kills in many different ways.
It certainly affected my family. If the person of interest did kill these five women, there's still hope for justice. My law enforcement sources tell me all eyes are on him as he awaits trial in 2012 for the separate murder-rape charge. At least until that verdict comes through, he's off the street and he can't hurt anyone. And if he is convicted, it might give authorities fresh ammunition to prosecute him in the Woodsman case. Police need your information too.